Live from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Welcome to the show. We're back again after missing a week. We're going to do something different. It's lecture season now. Well, first off, I'm Dave Giuliano, and I'm here with Marty Haynes.
How you doing, everybody?
And Maureen and Erica from SJGR here. They're going to be guest hosts, too. I realize a lot of the newer, a lot of the questions that were geared towards us, apparently, unless you're on TV, no one seems to know who any of the older people are in the field. I mean, no one knew who John Zappas was. Hans Holzer was a head scratcher. Ed Warren and Lorraine, they knew Lorraine Warren.
She's been on TV.
Yeah, she's been on TV, but they didn't know who Ed was. So I figured, not because I have a huge ego, but I thought maybe it'd be nice to explain, like, why I have a radio show and why I have a Ghost Hunter Store and, like, how I got involved. So I'll be the guest this week. So they're all going to grill me and ask questions. And all right, you guys can just take it away.
I'll just be the guest.
All right.
That means you'll be quiet until we ask questions?
Right, exactly.
Okay. So how long have you been in this field, Dave?
100 years.
Okay, now let's give it a reality.
I've been doing this about 25 years.
And you started with an internet website.
Right. When I started getting into this, originally looking for answers for myself. And I was like a techno geek, I guess. I was into the computer before the computers were cool. Back when people remember bulletin boards before the internet.
Yeah.
As soon as I got on the World Wide Web, back when it was only black and white, no pictures, just text, and I realized you could, like, you're communicating with everybody in the world, other countries and stuff. Right. So I figured there's got to be someone else out there that experienced what I did and had some sort of, like, looking for a common bond, at least, someone to commiserate with.
Yeah, somebody to talk to.
So I created the Shadowlands originally. The original section was just the ghost only. And I wrote my story down in, like, Reader's Digest version, posted it out there, and just put it out in on the news groups, which was kind of like message boards for those of you who don't know what news groups were. That just, like, shows you. I don't even know if the news groups even are active.
They are.
They're still out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the original internet, was the news groups. Anyway.
Your version of a blog, kind of.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I put this on the web, this new technology, you know, enabled me to reach out to all these people and asked, hey, is there anyone else experiencing the same thing? And now there's something like 16,000 or almost 17,000 stories on there. Basically created it, not as a place for entertainment, but I realize people go there to read the stories for entertainment because it's, you know, people are into that. But I don't correct the spelling. I don't correct the grammar. I put it in exactly the vernacular and the terms of the way the people want it to be, but it's their personal experiences in a place where they're not going to be ridiculed.
Well, you really just don't even stick with ghosts anymore. You do all the paranormal. Don't you have stories about all the paranormal?
Yeah. The Shadowlands was the very first paranormal website on the internet. It was the very first paranormal website listed in Yahoo and on Google. I had the very first Bigfoot webpage, the very first sea serpents and lake monsters and basically, the very first cryptozoology webpage, too, along with the first ghost webpage.
And aliens, you guys get into aliens and stuff then?
I wasn't the first UFO page.
No.
Someone beat me to that. I was the second UFO page.
Okay.
So, world mysteries and all that kind of stuff, again, the first. The Shadowlands is a whole compilation of that. And then I was the first one to actually have a message board where people could communicate back and forth when that technology came out, so, which actually became more of a, you know, I had to have people, many, many people, moderate that because that's where you get the personal attacks and all that kind of. Everyone who knows, you know, been on a message board, you know.
Is that when Tina started working on Shadowlands with you? Do you remember that far back?
I'm thinking this. I guess this December will be 18 years that the Shadowlands has been around. So Tina's been around for, I think, 16 of those 18.
And it's Tina Carlson.
Yeah. I used to have AOL chats. AOL actually used to be a more than just an email address. It used to be the sole way of many people just getting on the internet, but they had their own self-contained little world too. Mm-hmm. And they had chats, so I would announce chats off the webpage, and we would get maybe 20, 30 people in there, and I'd let them ask questions of me and Dave Umbria, who was one of the guys who trained me originally. He was an investigator for Ed and Lorraine Warren. And Tina came in one night, and then she was back the next week and back the next week, and she had a lot of personal experiences that were very, very deep and heavy. She saw the dark side early on. She learned a lot from her relatives and stuff, and we just got to talking, and it seemed like she was the perfect person to start helping me. Had I known it, you know, she's basically, I know she's going to hear this, and she's not listening live now, but she won't consider herself so, but I consider her an equal in peers, you know, the same amount of experience, the same amount of everything. She's been doing this just about, and including her experiences, just as long as I have, you know, and we both taught each other stuff. So she handles pretty much the day-to-day operations, most of the emails from the Shadowlands, because between the Ghost Hunter Store, South Jersey Ghost Research, my own email, the Shadowlands would just put another, you know, 500 emails in my inbox that I couldn't possibly read. And she has nothing to do all day but spend time on the computer and read that stuff. She loves it. She's the one who actually reads all the stories, decides which ones goes on the webpage. Mm-hmm. She's the one who actually reads all the haunted places they get and decides which ones sound like, you know, crap and which ones sound like they're legitimate people putting in haunted places. I just do the webpage. So it literally is a total partnership now.
Yeah.
So I try to give her as much credit, because 16 years, she deserves it.
And what I also like about it is you've made it a place for people to go and find groups, too. I know a lot of times people call here for the store that are across the country, and they'll say, you know, we need help, but you guys are too far away. How can we find help? And just right on there, go right onto the website, and I can find a group that's in their area, give them a couple different groups to look for, or give them a website to look at, you know, so that they can find their own group.
Yeah, there's that was something that started a little bit later on. And it was basically, a lot of the things you see on the website were because I had created things that were like my own cheat sheets, my own notes. People were always asking me, do you know places so-and-so? And back in those days, there was maybe one or two groups in every state, if that. And it wasn't every state, it was in general areas.
Right.
So we all knew each other. Like the very first show we did, remember when we talked to Dusty from down Florida? She was the whole ghost scene in Florida. Yeah. There wasn't anybody else in Daytona. I mean, but in their whole state, that was it. So, I mean, we all communicated. And so I created a list. Instead of just constantly having to refer back and answer the email, I just put a place there now for people to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we still keep it as up to date, but, you know, again, we don't have the TV show, so people don't submit the links like they used to. Even with the stories kind of have trailed off, too.
Right.
Because now more people would rather, you know, be on TV and tell their story or whatever. But at least I think the people who are coming to the website and putting their stories on.
It's outside noise. Sorry, guys.
That's the neighborhood. But then are actually submitting the stories. They kind of understand why they're putting them up. They're not just for entertainment.
Yeah.
They're really there to share their experience with other people who aren't going to look at them really weird and think they're nuts. I mean, because even for me now, it's still, I look at some of the stuff I experienced growing up, the only word that rolls off your tongue easy is nuts. You know, it was just too crazy to even imagine it happening.
So if we do that prequel to the Shadowlands, since you already opened that doorway, there was something in your childhood that got you started with this.
I was 3 years old. Woke up, there was a little child laying next to me in my bed who didn't belong. Kind of looked like, I wish I could remember I think it's the menagerie. If It's the episode of Star Trek where the guys with the blue gowns and the big bubble heads.
Yeah.
That's what this little kid looked like. I later learned through when I sketched it for someone, it looked like a hydrocephalic skull. Okay. The border on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
The gown actually had the hands sewn shut, which would have been what they would have done for newborns too.
Right.
And given I was 3 years old, it was like half my size. Moving his lips, couldn't really make out what it was saying, so I ran to my parents' room, ran to my dad, and said, you know, there's this little thing in my bed, and he just told me to basically shut up, go back to bed. And I went back in the room, it was still there, still trying to talk. I just grabbed my pillow and kind of jumped on top of it. And, boy, there's a lot of noise here today. Tonight's the second anniversary of the Mount Holly store opening, so there's a lot of traffic in the area. So, there's a lot of background noise here. But that little child continued, and I saw it up until maybe weeks before I moved out of the house when I was like 28.
Okay.
So, and there was periods where stuff stopped, periods where stuff started to change a little bit. There was one point where the activity even turned negative, where I would say it was demonic, and later that was kind of confirmed for me.
Right.
By other investigators, and during my first exorcism. Not one I participated in. Well, you did participate.
Yeah, you participated.
I was a participant, but I was not, like, a participating member. I was the focus of the exorcism.
Okay.
But apparently something left from those days was still there, and still attached to me, too.
Well, you've always told us, and you've always told our clients that we deal with that, you know, once it's there, it's a lifetime thing. You just have to.
Well, I learned that from, one person I've learned a lot from is John Zaffis. Yeah, I kind of look at him. You know, he was a mentor for me for years. After Dave Umbria, you know, moved on, I think he was like the next person that I kind of like. Turned to, did some cases with him, went up and visited, but did a lot of phone calls and emails. You know, wow, teaching me a lot. And I remember one of the things I learned from him was, you know, once that door's open, whether you opened it or it was open for you, it's never closed.
Right.
So that's something that you live with the rest of your life, knowing that, you know, it could always reoccur.
From that point, you went from the Shadowlands to the group?
Yeah, it was like, I was really reluctant at first. I was doing stuff for having gone through so much in my house, and even including the demonic stuff. I started wanting to learn more. So when I was like, I guess I was 18, I went to my first interview, and I interviewed the mayor of my town.
Mm-hmm.
And went into her house to check it out with my flashlight, my tape recorder, and that's about it. And check out the haunting she was talking about.
Back in the day, actually, that was big equipment back in the day.
I had no idea what I was doing. I read books, but like the books were old books, you know. I mean, Hans Holzer was probably the most modern at the
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
But even that was more stories, it wasn't a how-to.
Right.
So I was just going by what I thought, you know, you would do. I did a whole interview, recorded it. She told me the story. It's actually on the Shadowlands, too. It's the second story on there. It's called Uncle Mike.
Okay.
It's right after my personal story. That really scared the crap out of me, and because that was even worse than some of that was. That's my fear of Raggedy Ann dolls. That's where that started. Because these were Raggedy Ann dolls that like stood up on the bed and started laughing at the little girls. And then years later, when I was there, she was telling me that her other grandchildren were playing in the room, feeling like they were being watched. And she went and looked in the closet where they were, and it turned out that those dolls that they had disappeared for years,
mm-hmm.
they were up on the shelf, and that's why they felt like they were being watched. So I got to go in there and look at the dolls and the shelf and everything. And at that point, I decided that I got a lot more reading and stuff to do. I got a lot more things, you know, where maybe going into houses isn't where I should just jump right into.
Right.
So once I started the Shadowlands, when I got hooked up with Dave Umbria, I kind of worked with a group with him. And I was more of like a client counselor. since I had lived in the, grown up in a house that was haunted, mm-hmm. and I had the some of the stuff that was demonic too, his group basically dealt with more of the hardcore and the negative cases, okay. being an investigator for the warrants and stuff like that. So I actually got kind of reverse training. I was trained from like someone who was into the demonology aspect instead of the ghost stuff. But that was most of my questions when I used to grill him. He was an expert on my webpage, okay. on the Shadowlands. He would answer the questions that I couldn't answer.
Right.
And probably for almost like 5-6 years. And in exchange, I was a member of his group, and I would be the person who the clients would talk to, and they would I'd give them the light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing. I survived, I got through it, and kind of helped them through it. You know, I was the pep talk.
Okay.
But it took me years to get to the point where I would go back into a house again. And that was basically through, I guess, like 13 years ago with SJGR. So there was almost 12 years of learning and reading and being taught by other people in between my first experience of going into someone else's house and then going back in. Nowadays, I mean, I guess even with us, we train people for 3 months and then we take them into private houses.
Well, we don't start them off as, you know, in the demon end of it. We start them off with the Casper kind of things and let them trip themselves into it.
Even the Casper stuff I was experiencing, my reference was the horror movies I would see on TV,
right.
and all the negative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the biggest questions that comes up through lecture season is, you know, I have a dark shadow in my house. What do I do?
It's like, yeah, I wish I had a dark shadow. I had figures that were walking across. I had a guy that used to lean up in front of the... in my parents' bedroom, like in the doorway,
mm-hmm.
and just like stare at me as I walk by. My defense was to, whenever I had to go upstairs or put my toys away or go upstairs to get something from my bedroom, I was at the far end of the hallway, so to walk up the steps, I would go all the way down the hallway past the door where the guy was standing,
right.
and I would just like sing, or I can't whistle, I would whistle, but I would just sing a song loud enough. I figured if I stopped singing, all of a sudden my parents would realize something happened. Psychologically, that was like that was my defense mechanism. And then eventually, actually, early on, my neighbor kind of she was into Edgar Casey and
okay.
a lot of spiritual stuff, and she actually saw some angels and angelic battles actually out on between our houses.
Wow!
One time, she said that she saw a army of good angels and fallen angels battling out. And this was not a lady that was, again, was prone to exaggeration or anything she said, I believe.
Or needed medicine or...
But she's the first person who told me about boundaries and, mm-hmm. and that I was the power source. My fear was feeding this guy. I was enabling him to appear every time because I was so afraid of him being there. I was giving him the energy to appear.
Mm-hmm.
So she told me and gave me a whole big pep talk. Next time you see him, stop, turn and face him. If he's still there, tell him, I see you, but you really freaked me out. I'm scared of you, and this is my house. I don't want you to scare me anymore. And I did that, and the words probably didn't come out that smoothly. I was probably like,
jittery
and like, surprised I didn't wet myself or anything else, but I never saw him again. That person disappeared. So whatever it was, it might have even been a relative for all I know.
Right.
But because, again, my mindset and my frame of reference.
Well, it's those things that our parents teach us. You never talk to strangers. Well, if there's a human stranger or a spirit stranger, it's still a stranger. So your reaction's going to be the same, as a child.
Yeah.
See, my parents never bought into that stuff. They never believed any of that until I was at least, like, 17. So at that point, I had been going, 15 years, 16 or 14 years of experience of being terrified before someone finally acknowledged, hey, maybe you are seeing some stuff. And that's when we did some history of the house, but that didn't really... We were on property that was like the original township, the farm that we were actually between the two main houses. And that house we lived in was 70 years old, but the houses on either side were, pushing 300.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like there was no maps of the area at the time. There was no way to figure out who was lived there or what had possibly happened there. All we know is a guy who sold us the house, who was the first owner, started digging out in the basement and stopped, boarded everything up, and sold the house. Now, he was an out-of-work painter that had hurt his back. You know, that was the story.
Right.
But like,
did he run out of money or did he run into something?
If you had hurt your back, you couldn't hurt it too bad if you're digging a basement out by hand. But something something made him suddenly stop. And by the time I was old enough to like maybe go even research him, they didn't have any kids. They had passed away, relatives, so there was no way of tracking down anything else. So the history of it hit a dead end. I did go in that basement though, and one day crawl down. I took my dog Sparky because he was probably the most sensitive dog I've ever had.
Yeah.
And he stayed at the opening with me, and I took like 3 flashlights with me because I've seen those movies. So I knew the flashlights would die, and I crawled all the way back to the spot where the spirit would always appear, which was the third step on our stairs going upstairs.
Okay.
And actually the third step is the first step that's actually hollow that goes down. If you open it up, you'd be right down into the crawl space.
Mm-hmm.
And right there on top of the dirt, and we had wall-to-wall carpeting all my life, so there's no way anything would have slipped down, was a card from my old maid card deck. And it was the old maid card, the card that scared the crap out of me, of all of them. And it was like kind of like, the edges were like all burnt, a little bit. Not burnt, almost like someone like poured like some sort of like acidic something on it. Not like a match
or anything. Deteriorating,
like that. Yeah, it was deteriorating, but everything else, there was no debris on, no dust on it, no nothing. It was sitting on top of that. And this is, I'm in my late teens, early 20s when I'm doing this. That deck of cards I had when I was like 5 or 6.
So that should have been covered with something.
Right, it should have been covered with dust, debris, spider web, something. It should have been laying out directly under that staircase. So I took the card and I put it in a little Bible. And I always kept it in the glove compartment of my car up until the last truck. This truck, it's not in there.
No, no.
When I cleaned out the last truck, I couldn't even tell you where it is now. I think I probably just tossed it. I've been carrying it because I never wanted to bring it in the house. Because whatever it was, you know.
Well, yeah, was there attachment to it? Was it something that's...
It was a message for me, I think. I don't know what... Again, it triggered the fear in me.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because as soon as I saw the book card, it was. I'm surprised they even grabbed it as fast as I was trying to move, you know, my ass out of there to get out of the crawl space. Because he only dug out like only the first like little 5 foot could you stand up in. The rest of you literally was a crawl space. It was about 2.5 feet. So I'm on my belly now, crawling back almost the length of the house backwards. You know, trying to get the hell out of there. You know, by the time I'm crawling back, Sparky's already out the door, and he's up in the bar, banging his tail, looking at me. He's like, so he sees me panicking. He's like, I'm out of here. I'm dead. Forget this. See, that's part of the story I even forgot all about, that whole card thing.
Yeah, and for it to put it that far back, how does it ever realize you were going to go that far back? Something drew you back there.
That's when my mom finally started believing me. That's around the time when that was happening, and I showed her the card, and you know, she said the same thing. It's wall-to-wall carpeting.
Yeah.
There's no way. It goes from all the way up the staircase. It's the same. There's no gaps or anything for anything to slide through there. And she said even they had recently had somebody up there, an electrician or a plumber or somebody, that would have noticed something out of the ordinary, or would have just like crawled over it.
It would have kicked dirt over it or something, yeah.
Right, so the way it was sitting there was very unusual. So I wound up I put like scapulars in I kept my Bible on that step. And then the closet, which was underneath the staircase, that's where he was building the staircase down. And he actually had started creating the staircase to go down. That was all boarded up, too. So in there, I had hung stuff, too. Mm-hmm. Which I believe until... that stuff's still there in the closet. But I know they finally removed the Bible and everything off the steps.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know.
Nobody else has... And they still live in the house.
They still live in the house. There was... Yeah, my sister... You know, I sleep with nightlights. I mean, I still to this day have nightlights, little like lamps or something to illuminate almost every room.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of us do. But my sister literally slept with the light on until she was like, you know, through high school.
Yeah.
The full bedroom light on. But she would never talk about what she saw. When she was younger, she talked about monsters and different things. And I kind of think some of the things she was saying because a couple times she had mentioned seeing something on the steps, and it was the same place that I would see the one apparition of the child peeking around the corner at me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she was seeing, or seeing the same spirit. Maybe it was interpreting it in a different way, or
right,
seeing it a different
right.
way, but it was enough that she was freaked out, because that my mom used to blame me for telling the ghost stories and getting her, you know, all riled up. But it's like, I'm not telling ghost stories, I'm telling you what I'm seeing.
Right. Yeah, we went through that. So in between that time of starting working with the other group and then starting with SJGR, the books and everything came in there, or they came in after that? You started writing, was the which one was the first one?
That was the Positive Energy for Haunted Homes.
And then you went to the Armor of God?
And then I went through the Ghost Research 101.
And then the Armor
All
of God.
Those were, see, I guess I was a late bloomer in thinking that I was kind of against people making money off of this stuff. Because when I first started, there was quite a few websites out there.
Mm-hmm.
That popped up within maybe like the first 5 or 6 years of the Shadowlands being around, in the very early infancy of the internet. You're always going to have some entrepreneur who's going to take everything that you've already written,
sure,
put it on a CD called a certification course, charge $150, and it was free to join his group, you know. And so people were, he was becoming like a millionaire basically,
mm-hmm,
off of. So I made sure that all my stuff, and that's where the Ghost Hunting 101.
Okay.
domain.com came from. I put everything that I could possibly put up there out there for free, and I would write article after article and start doing more of the ghost hunting stuff and information for free to combat people forking out $150 for the stuff they could get for free. So the first book was basically, it's more of a pamphlet. It's very, you know, 40 pages or 50 pages, but it was all the different techniques that we used to tell the clients, you know, the people in the houses, how to deal with creating more positive environment. Because,
mm-hmm,
law of attraction, positive is going to get rid of negative,
right,
or help get rid of negative. It's not guaranteed. But like a lot of things, people are, get caught up in their religious beliefs or, you know, what they're told. So I took a unique view and tried to make it, put it in a way that no matter what it was, whether it was herbs or crystals or whatever,
mm-hmm,
it wasn't going to violate anyone. They weren't going to hell for, you know, or you have to go to confession for it.
Right.
You know, I kind of explained, you know, there's, you know, how many different types of minerals, rocks, and crystals out there, you know, was on whatever day God created them, you know, was he just bored during that hour and decided, like, 500 different crystals with different properties on throw there. And while I'm going to make 5,000 different kinds of plants, too, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he made them.
Yes.
Did he have a purpose? If everything has a purpose, and we know plants medicinally have purposes, we even find, like, you know, why do snakes exist, or venomous snakes? We're finding now medicinal reasons.
Right.
So everything has a purpose. Why not crystals? We know, those of you who are old enough to know about crystal radios, I had one when I was little. I mean, it was powered by the quartz crystal.
Mm-hmm.
All you needed was to clip it on a piece of metal for the grounding, and you can get, back then it was AM radio.
Yes.
But I used to listen to the Flyers games at night, because all I needed was this little thing, and my parents didn't know I was listening to the radio. I just clip it on the lamp, and I put the earplug in, and it was, there were no batteries, no nothing, the crystal was the power. So there is real energy, there's real vibrations,
Well, scientifically, it's scientifically proven. They've measured some of the energies that come off some of the crystals.
So when I put it in the thing that God created them, they must be a purpose. And the same thing with the smudging that goes back to, you know, people say, okay, well, that's Native American, that's not against my religion or whatever. But they'll sit through, you know, Palm Sunday and, you know, whatever else, funerals and everything else. I was an altar boy, so I'm thinking like all the different things. I know Palm Sunday, Easter, Christmas, I mean, all the big major holidays,
mm-hmm,
the high holy days. I mean, you're like smoked out with this frankincense and myrrh, which is plant resin,
yep,
that they are smudging you with. You know, it's just that people don't think in those terms. They think like they see the Indian going around with the smudge stick, you know, doing like the Hopi Indian doing,
mm-hmm,
the dance. They don't think about the guy in the real gaudy outfit swinging the gold censer around over palm leaves, that somehow that makes rational sense, but the Indian does it.
Right.
And when you it's kind of like I try to hit them with common sense and make them think a little bit. And it seemed to it works with a lot of the clients. I mean, we still kind of use all those techniques. But it was my cheat sheets, and I just put it together in a book and did the self-publishing thing. And the same thing with, like, the Ghost Research 101. Most of those articles was either stuff I used for training SJGRI members or stuff off the Shadowlands. I just compiled them actually in a coherent order and put it together and finally figured, hey, you know, not everyone can come to... I can't train everybody.
Yeah.
If I can charge, you know, and really, with the books, there's very, very little money to be made when you're self-publishing. So I would never get rich off the books, but at least I'm compensated for, I guess, the energy that I put out and for the knowledge. The experience is what you're kind of paying for. You guys don't have any questions, do you? You're just sitting there smiling. And
I actually have one question. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. Obviously, as a director of South Jersey Ghost Research, you deal with a lot of different people and a lot of different issues. So how difficult is it to juggle so many different people's personalities and still stay motivated to want to be a director?
I am not motivated to be a director. I'd like to say that right now. If there's anyone that would like to be director of South Jersey Ghost Research, I will give it up in a heartbeat.
He's lying.
It's not something anyone who wants to start their own group and be in charge, think twice. Don't do it. You know, it's difficult because...
It's a lifestyle. It's your livelihood.
Isn't it almost like you have to be a psychiatrist or a psychologist in addition to...
And a marriage
having
counselor.
Having all this training.
And I'm everything to everybody on any given day, whenever they need, whatever they need. Because I have to know, to balance a group, that's why our group's been around so long. You know, and been one of the more successful groups in the area while other ones seem to disappear. And we've had the infighting, we've had the disgruntled members leave, we've had all that. But we've survived because it's a balancing act, it really is. I have to know everyone's, trigger points, you know, problems, issues, all that kind of stuff, what's going on in their personal life, all that. So I can balance out. So when someone's, you know, in a bad mood, I can mitigate if someone else is offended by the bad mood, or you know, it takes a lot to do. That's probably why I had a heart attack last year because of SJG. but I don't know. Personally, I get more out of now the structure we have with, you know, I know some groups will get us and go, how many assistant directors do you need? And you have a co-director, and then you have a board of directors, and all this other stuff. It's delegation, otherwise, because one person can't handle it all. I am, or I used to be, a control freak. I had to have my hands into every little thing. You got to admit, I don't do it as much. I want to be informed of what's going on, but I don't have to have my hands in.
Yes, I have to say, since last September, you have backed off.
And
you've mellowed a bit.
It just had to be that way because I couldn't do everything. I couldn't be everywhere. But that's actually brought some of the enjoyment back to it, too. And part of the... I mean, when you're in charge, you can't relax, you can't sit back, and you can't just enjoy a case you're on. It's more like work. Because you're in charge, you're overseeing everything, you're responsible for everything. Now I can assign someone to be the team leader, and I can go just to be the investigator, and I can kind of enjoy... And remember what it was like
to
find you. I can actually, since I hoard equipment and I have to have one of everything, now I can actually use some of the equipment instead of just having it in the cases and never use it.
And leasing it out.
Yeah, exactly. Or some of the equipment I never get to see because I open the case and it's gone. Like my thermal.
So what kind of advice do you give to people when they come into the store and say, I'm starting my own group?
Don't do it. It takes a certain personality. I've told people, there's been people who have left our group that have started other groups. And I remember one in particular, about 3 or 4 years ago, went and started his own group. And I said, he said, do you have any advice for me? And whatever. Because it was kind of on amicable terms, leaving. And I said, don't do it. And I said, I'm not being mean, whatever, but, you know, I'm telling you, like, as a friend, I don't think you can pull this off, because you have no idea how many different ways it's going to pull you. And probably within 6 months, I got a call and saying, yeah, you were right. You know, it depends on what you're doing. If you're doing it as a hobby, it's something different. It's a lot less stress. If we do, we go to the utmost extreme. I mean, we're out there. If there were extreme ghost hunting, there's a show. We would have to be on extreme ghost hunting. I mean, because no one else is out there doing the amount of cases we're doing. Then all the prelims during the week, all the emails, all the questionnaires, all that other kind of stuff. So it's,
It takes a lot. And up until last year, even though I did a lot of help, I know that you, Maureen, Erica's behind, you know, but at some point we learned exactly how much it took, you know, because this happened right at seminar season.
Yes.
And it was all kind of thrown in our lap, and nobody really knew exactly every little detail that Dave did, you know. It was kind of a, oh, that has to get done? Oh, and that has to
it
get done?
It was a little bit of a shock, I think,
it
to
was,
everyone.
I think it was a huge shock.
Yeah.
We did a great job of doing it, but we learned, and I think that's when everybody sat down and said to you, Dave, you can't do this all by yourself. You can't do it. It's not right.
You know, but sometimes you have to go do things yourself, though. You have to take initiatives, because no one else will do it. Like, I had to get up and turn off that buzzer you guys have been hearing on and off on the doorbell, because no one else would just shut the buzzer off.
Well, maybe if you told someone else
how
to do it.
You told somebody, I would shut it
See,
off.
And that was one of the things we had to learn, because it was like, okay, Dave, now what? Because we don't know what to do here.
Yeah.
So what should we do? You know, and I'll come. No. You're going to heal. We're going to do this. You're going to sit back and just watch.
I enjoyed just watching. It was fun. Yeah, I'm glad I'm back now.
For a month, and then that's all it took. I think he was recovered within like a month and a half, right?
Yeah. I remember seeing him at the Witches Ball.
Yeah.
Was that like 2.5 weeks?
Yeah. Well,
I think he had just gotten out of the hospital like an hour
before. The Witches Ball, I think I left. I didn't leave the porch.
No.
I was walking with a cane. I mean, I didn't really go. That's when I got, the next time everyone saw me, they go, wow, you look really good. I'm like, boy, I must have looked really, really bad.
Well, you know, it must have been your apparition walking around, because I saw you way in the back.
A couple times, pointing,
yeah.
and
I did walk back to the tent to say hi. And I did. I think I actually managed to make it across the street.
Yeah,
to say
you
hi
did.
Over there.
Yeah.
That was about it. I didn't stay the whole time. That was that one lecture and a brief appearance at Gabriel Davies was it my whole October last year.
Mm-hmm. So it took 4 or 6 of us to do what you did. So exactly how do you do that every year?
Well, I don't.
I mean, as we're coming up to the next, you know,
I don't
season.
Sleep. I feel bad because I only made one lecture this week, but doctor's appointments and everything else, I would have been at more. But I don't know. You just go into that October. But this time of year comes around and. It's a different mode you go into.
Yeah.
It's like hyper speed, and you get that tunnel vision and that focus. That's why I was telling her, I mean, last year, a lot of the people that have only been in the group for 1 or 2 years, yeah, they don't remember what it was like when I ran it. So there was like a lot of people trying to overcompensate and do a lot of extra this
mm-hmm.
year. And it's like, well, we're, that's like, I got it. I've done this before. Okay. Trust me, I know what I'm doing. Yeah. With the assignments and all the other stuff, so. But I mean, it's nice to get the helping hand. I know Bridget had, you know, one of the assistant directors, she was saying, like, asking if she should just stop trying to help. I'm like, no. Even though I'm complaining, don't stop trying to help. Just keep it in there, because I probably need it, you know. So it's good to have those, you know. But there's no secret to it. It's just, it's a passion for wanting to help the people. Like, you know, we're one of the groups that we're not in it to prove ghosts exist.
No.
I don't think it's possible. I'll repeat that again. I don't think it's possible to prove ghosts exist, at least in my lifetime anyway. The technology's not there, and the human brain and the way we, you know, perceive things just isn't at that level yet. no matter what evidence you come up with, you're going to have people doubt that it's real. So,
and always come up with other theories as to why that happened.
Yeah, so instead of banging my head against the wall trying to do that, we're helping people who know they got something going on in their house. Now, first we got to figure out if it's paranormal. If it is, we got to help them get to a point where they're, you know, happy with the results.
They're comfortable with what's going on, yeah.
Right.
Because most of the time that's what it is. It's just getting comfortable with knowing that there's somebody else living in your house with you.
Hey, Lou, if you're out there, I doubt you'd be listening, but someone out there knows Lou from Philadelphia, Ghost Hunters Alliance. You can tell him Dave said he was right. Okay? We had a big debate in the very beginning about I thought all spirits would be sent on and moved on.
Okay.
Because they were someone's mother, they were someone's grandmother, they were someone's relative. Shouldn't we try to help them all move on?
So you were in a theory that they were stuck here.
Right, or even if they weren't necessarily stuck here, but they didn't belong here, so let's get them all moving on. And, you know, I was very adamant about that. That was before I realized how arrogant that was. And that was playing God, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took, my beliefs and stuff have definitely changed over time and over experience and seeing how things really are. You know, now I know there's, you know, belief systems that cause people to be here and stay behind. There's a million reasons why they stay behind, and who am I to, unless it's an extreme circumstance, you know.
Or they ask you. They physically ask you for the help, yes.
Right, that's, yeah, like I said, there has to be some sort of mitigating factor for, you know, you can't just go around trying to move all spirits on. That's playing God, and it's arrogant, assuming that you know what's best for some spirit, you have no idea who it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, at one point I did think like that. You know, at one point I thought orbs were ghosts, too, so, I mean, we all learn and grow, right? I mean, I don't know how many times we've changed our theories and how we look, but that's the other thing. It's why I think the group's been around so long, too. I mean, we've adapted, and we're not afraid to say, yeah, we were wrong about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll just adjust how we...
Or our theories changed on that subject because
we're always
evidence we've picked up.
We're always learning, we're always changing, we're always, you know, evolving. And that's the key to that's the key to all of it, is to keep evolving with not only the technology, but the your beliefs and stuff. Because everything you've been taught, you know, a lot of it isn't all exactly as, you know, you were taught it.
Right.
There's so many world religions out there. I don't think it's like one day there's going to be one big judgment and, you know, God's going to pull a name out of a hat and go, hey, they were right. The rest of you guys, take a hike, you know? Obviously... And when you study them and look at them, the similarities are striking. There's not much difference in any of them. The belief systems are very similar. It's the culture that's different, and how the culture relates the belief system, which just makes it even more ironic that we kill each other over religion when we're actually worshiping the same exact thing. So, but I digress.
One issue that's coming up in the lectures that I've noticed is people, you know, questioning credibility. So I know that when you're honest about things and saying, hey, we were wrong about this. Now, you know, our research is finding this. I think that gives people a little bit more confidence in your credibility to boot.
One of the best ways to, I mean, I'm brutally honest at lectures. People ask, so, you know, what does it mean when you get an EMF reading? How the hell am I supposed to know? I know I shouldn't be getting one. It doesn't belong there. Scientifically, that roving, self-contained electromagnetic field shouldn't be there. What it has to do with ghosts? I don't have a clue. You know, I know that it happens a lot in places that report spirit activity, but that's where the knowledge ends. Everything else is all theory.
Yeah, at that point, it's a question, you know. Is it what they're trying to manifest with? Is it just that they're pulling it in? Is it something that they're spewing out?
Or is it just naturally occurring phenomena that attracts, they're attracted to?
Right.
I mean, it's, there's so many different possibilities. Again, it's, can, will we be able to prove that? You know, maybe somewhere down the line you'll be able to prove some of these theories. But, like, people call the store all the time. I need a meter that it's going to help me find ghosts. And I'm like, so do I. Those would make it real easy. I mean, we really wouldn't be ghost hunting anymore.
No.
You know, it'd be like ghost finding.
And when you're done with that, I need the vacuum that goes with it so I can suck it up and put them in the drawer. For sure.
Right, so we can just get rid of them and then solve everyone's problems. It's like, where you want to... And we can install them. There's people that do want spirits in their house.
Right.
You know, so it's like, we got to have a removal and installation service. And then you could have, like, if you, you know, think of, like, the gag gifts, you know, you can get the people, like, you get that real, like, the jokester. The jokester guy. You put him, like, in that, your friend's thing, it's like, you punked him, you know.
We're back in a week to take that out for you, for now. They want that loving spirit in the house, so we can put them in there for a little while, and when you get tired of it, we'll remove it and put another
one
there.
There'd be so many, I mean, that would be... so morally wrong, because I can just think of something.
Purchase or lease?
Yeah, during the divorce.
Rent a ghost.
you get your mother-in-law sent to you. There could be so many different battles going on there. It would just be...
That could be wrong on so many levels.
See, so some things are better left, you know, not found out, not proven theory-wise. But yes, honesty is the best policy. And if you don't know... say you don't know. Don't pretend to know. I hate posers who just stand up there and that's where they get into trouble with the skeptics and they get the people who are going to. There's always going to be a skeptic in the audience of doubting something you're going to say.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to defuse a skeptic is agree with them. And it's like, well, you're right. I can't prove that's a ghost. And can you prove it's not?
Well, that's, I think, the TV shows, they kind of help us in one sense, and then they hurt us in the other sense, because, you know, they do that stuff, and they people know that, you know, that half hour, there's no way they got all that evidence in a half hour of a show, but at least they know that people are out there.
We know that, and a lot of people that do this
know that.
A lot
of people know that.
But there's a lot of people out there, like the people on Survivor are really stranded on an island completely by themselves.
Yes, yes.
And that there's no medical tents and doctors right off screen, along with the whole camera crew. You know, how do they think the whole thing's being filmed if they're on the island by themselves?
Yeah. But in a sense, it helped because it's putting it out there for people to, so they don't think that they're in that classification of being crazy. There is something going on in the house and they can ask for help.
And there's people out there that do it, and regular people that have regular jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that Ghost Hunters was the very first show of the type, but I think that opened the door up and increased the amount of people we got as, you know, for cases, because they're like, hey, you put these two plumbers in, they go out at night, and then they go help people and look for ghosts and stuff. It's like, you know, no one would have put that together and assumed mm-hmm. that. And it was like you didn't open the Yellow Pages and look for it. And back then, even it wasn't on the internet. People didn't even think of looking up. What did you look up? I mean, the term ghost hunter was in the community we kind of knew it, but it's like we didn't. You know, it wasn't something that was something the general public knew
right.
about.
Right.
So they wouldn't be like Googling ghost hunter and looking for help, you know.
Yeah, before that, the first reference they would come to is the Ghostbusters, you know.
Ghostbusters, so. Right, and the movies. Or parapsychologists, which, you know, no offense to some of the parapsychologists I know, but, you know, they're looking at it from a different point of view.
Yeah.
They are not discounting the possibility, I'm quoting right from the one MSNBC thing, they don't discount the possibility of non-corporeal entities being existing, but... yeah, more than likely, it's being caused by the people's subconscious themselves. They're either projecting the image, or it's some sort of imagination or hallucination that is real to them, and that's the explanation for more ghosts than actually the non-corporeal entity. I love that. That disembodied voices. I don't get to throw that around too much.
Big words.
That's the word of the week.
So you started the group, and or you took over the group. It was already started.
I had no intention of taking over the group or being the director.
So you got suckered into taking over the group.
It was an accident. It was purely accidental. When the groups merged, it was Ghost Hunters of America, PSI, and the group I belonged to out of New York, which the name was just too long. It was a bunch of NY, like New York Society for Psychic and Paranormal Research and Study or something like that. Well, he was forming another group that he wanted to put chapters in different areas. And I said, okay, I'll help you form a chapter in New Jersey then. But I'll be like, just so you're the liaison. So PSI was like a bunch of young people starting a group. Ghost Hunters of America, they were a bunch of older people, been around since 1955, doing stuff, mostly psychic head. The young people were doing the equipment. Mm-hmm. They were combining forces. I kind of got involved with that and became like three groups all merging together. And then Dave Umbria kind of pulled out, and next thing I knew, I was a co-director of South Jersey Ghost Research, and then the other co-director left, and
it was you.
Yeah, there I was.
It was you.
Not planned. If I would have known beforehand that was going to happen, I would have stayed home that day. But
so back then, did you do all these lectures and seminars that we do now to educate people?
I kind of think like the seminar events where it's you come and you see some of the equipment. You get to explore part of the building in the dark with some of the equipment. You get to see an EVP lab or the equipment set up or a night vision lab. All the different things we do. We started that. There was nobody doing that before us. Gabriel Davies, is this the 11th year, I think, we've been doing this? That was the first one. And actually, that was the first one. Fort Mott, back in like 1999, was the very first one we did. And that was the same kind of thing. We had different things set up that you could go to. One was like a video on something, the other one was like an equipment demo, the other one was like, we took them through the casemates and had them walk around and investigate with some of our equipment. It gave them like a hands-on thing, but that and the lectures, it made it, instead of reaching one person at a time dealing with clients, we were able to reach a whole bunch of people all at one time. And you know, at the seminars, especially the events where they're coming in and they're doing all the little stuff, a lot of it's for entertainment, but how many times do we get pulled aside and they get asked questions that
sure.
they would never have the guts to say in front of other people or even send an email, but while they got us here and you know they're right in front of us, they'll shoot that question out and maybe we make them feel perfectly at ease now and they're fine with their situation. That's why the lectures, I mean, we do a ridiculous amount of lectures compared to like everybody else too. And there's still more, actually, I found out today. There's still a couple
more. They're
still
calling, yes.
And it's hard to turn them away because how do you turn away? Like, we're getting some of the northern places and up in North Jersey we're doing, we're getting like 60, 70 people come out.
Mm-hmm.
We can give our message to 60 or 70 people instead of one at a time, maybe, you know? There's how many of those people walk out of there with no more problems? You know, the problem is completely done because we've answered their question.
Right.
That's the other thing I like to do with the lectures too. I was trying to explain to the people the other night. I like to answer the questions that I know they're going to ask. So I might get asked one question, but I will answer four questions. And you can see the hands actually coming down as they got on. There was 10 people with hands up. The next time after I answer one question, or one person's question, I've answered four other people's questions too. So it's a more efficient way of doing it.
Well, that's because you've been doing it for so long that, you know, you get, you know what they're going to ask. We're still new at this. I know. I still wait for the next question to come along. What before you get in it, the question that you get every lecture that you know is coming, but you really just don't want to hear it.
What's the scariest thing that's ever happened? That's the one because. Again, the other night, I used the cockroach story.
Okay.
You're sitting on the kitchen floor, and all of a sudden, the black mass covers the entire wall, and it starts moving. And I, like, jump up real fast, and I'm trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And, you know, I I flip the light on, and it's covered entirely in cockroaches. And there's our equipment and our jackets sitting on the table right in front of it. Because most people don't realize. Very few people spend, you know, sit on the floor in their dark kitchen, so they don't really realize they have an issue. So, you know, we find out people have pest problems before they do.
Yes.
So, that and the skunks in the cemetery,
yeah.
That's probably the follow-up one where skunks had their business ends pointing at us in two different areas. I hear a ghost.
I hear a ghost. You hear a ghost?
Yeah, I do.
Must be this haunted place. Sounds like our party crew is starting to come in for the...
Two-year anniversary
party that we're having tonight. Yes, we're going to be partying at the Ghost Hunter store, so if you're close enough, come on by.
Yeah, we'll be here till 11.
Well, Dave, thank you for enlightening us and sharing with us exactly why you do what you do and why you do it.
That was an hour?
That was an hour.
Wow.
Yes, you can.
I need to be the guest more often.
You can talk. I know. We have a lot more questions, but we kind of run out of time, so we'll have to do this again.
I can always just be the backup guest then. Whenever anybody's there.
I can just talk to you.
I know I like to listen to me. I'm very interesting.
You'll be listening to the podcast later.
That's right. I probably will. I'll download it right away and put it on my iPod. Wow, that guy's good. That guy's good.
So the scariest thing I've ever been around is Dave. All right, well, we're going to move on. Next week we have Doug and Pat from Ghost Soldiers coming on with us before we get into the Witch's Ball next week. So we'll be looking forward to talking to all of them.
So, everybody, until next week, we will see you. Take care and be safe out there.